Welcome to Career Tools. Today's cast, Press Relations, Part 1 of 2. Well, many of you probably haven't thought about it before, but all of us need some simple guidelines for our relationship with the press, in whatever form that is. And today we have a lot of straightforward ideas to share, some of which will surprise many of you. Here we go. Well, the internet and this explosion of new media has really created another opportunity for folks to shine. Right? Isn't that right? I mean, there's all sorts of opportunities to interact with the press. And when we say the press, I'm talking about all forms of the press, right? Blogs,
right.
Traditional media, podcast, you name it. There's a lot of opportunity for folks to interact with the press.
Yeah. Depends on how you define shine, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Let's say they have an opportunity to interact with the press.
Yes.
Whether they shine or not is another question entirely. And
yeah,
of course, we have some things to say about that.
Yeah, we have some straightforward ideas to share about how to have a good relationship with the press. This is one of those casts, when we were talking about it in advance, Wendy said this is classic career tools because it's something nobody teaches. Press relationships, usually unless you're an executive, that there is enormous risk. And unfortunately, lately, because of the explosion of new media, there's even more risk because people mistakenly believe that they can just talk to the media like their friends. And too many people are going to end up regretting that in the long run. So
good. So why don't you give us an outline of what we're going to talk about?
Yeah, I got a lot. We got a lot of points here. The modern media and the press are different in some ways. We need to talk about that for a little bit because I know when we say press, people think, you know, newspapers and TV, and that's not exactly what we mean. Okay. Number two, your company probably has rules about this, and they probably say don't do it or they require you to go to training. Number three, no comment is always appropriate and very often the right answer. Number four, stay positive. Number five, simply repeat your point when challenged, believe it or not. This is where a lot of people fail. Number six, big surprise here, but the media are not just reporting. If you think they're just gathering facts, you're mistaken. Number seven, watch diligently for the opposing point of view. This is how people are often made to look silly in the press. Number eight, just because you're right, what you're saying is true, doesn't mean your comments are going to be appreciated. Number nine, this will stun people. You will be misquoted, and it is legal to misquote you, at least in the U.S. Number 10 is what we call the Anna Scott Notting Hill rule. And number 11, we recommend sort of flipping this on its head a little bit, that you maintain your own clipping service for your firm and so on. So a lot of points.
That is a lot. So, okay, so let's get right into it. And we talked about a little bit in the beginning here, but modern media today is much more diverse than they used to be, right? I mean, and that's good for the spread of information and communications, but sometimes, just sometimes, yeah. not so great for us.
Sometimes, right. Yeah. I think what's happened is new media, the internet and blogs and Twitter and all that kind of stuff, you know, they adopted some of the rules of the old media in terms of talking to people and getting background and so on.
But then they invented some of their own along the way. Yeah. We don't like that rule. So we're just going to change it.
Yeah. And to be fair to them, they also thought that rule made no sense for the new media kind of thing. And either because the purpose or value, the purpose of the old rule for the old press was one thing, and that purpose or the value associated with it doesn't exist. So we certainly respect the explosion of new media, and here we are talking on a podcast, which is a form of new media. But you're right in the sense that they have changed the rules enormously. And frankly, the majority of people I know don't know the old rules, let alone the new rules. And I think there is an underlying, you correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think there's an underlying misunderstanding that the new media, and frankly, therefore, because most people don't, most particularly young people today, don't think about the press, and the press is part of the media, obviously. What ends up happening is people simply see it as an opportunity rather than a risk. And the rules and the guidelines that people give are built around the opportunity rather than around mitigating the risk. So our guidance here is really simple. For each type of new media, and even for different organizations or companies, deliveries of each type of new media, there are individual rules that we recommend for professionals. The rules are different. And while more openness is often encouraged, folks, there are professional risks involved. And these risks, they create situations that are often irreversible for us in our careers. This cast specifically tends to focus more on old media, but it has special significance, we feel, because many of the principles of behavior for new media were built out of old media guidance. And when we say new media, Facebook, MySpace, Twitter, Flickr, LinkedIn, chat rooms, blogs, all of it, they are different, obviously, than the press, and in many ways, totally better, totally better. And look, we like the value we can get from all the new media. But the problem is that's where the analysis stops, at the value. And I was saying before, all value inherently carries risk. You know, even ice cream, you know, it has value, but it has risk associated with it. There are no free lunches. And what this means for us is that we all have an obligation to know how to relate to all of the media, press, non-press, new and old, generally. And then each of them, we need to learn how to interact with each of them specifically. If we're going to think about ourselves as professionals and we're going to come in contact with the media and we're going to make representations or an impression that's going to redound to us and to our industry and to our company and perhaps to our families and so on. We've already done one cast on social media, the MySpace cast, and despite what we're sure are many people who disagree with us regarding our approach and assuming that our approach, which is assuming that everything we do on the internet is public, and so professionals and managers must not get too personal or private in social or other media, we have been, I must say that people send us more notes about how right we are. Time and again, we've been proven right about articles and stories and anecdotes forwarded us from all over the world, from many of our members saying, oh, another case where somebody did something stupid or lame on Facebook or MySpace or on their blog or whatever, and they got fired. I remember reading a brief aside in a men's magazine. I want to say it was Men's Health. And at the bottom, there's a little thing by Dan Abrams, who's a legal, I think he's a lawyer. And somebody wrote in, can I get fired because of what's on my blog? And Dan Abrams said yes. And so often lawyers give equivocal answers, but his answer was yes, period. He said they can fire you for almost anything at any time, in the same way that because of at-will employment, you can quit at almost anything, anytime, for almost any reason. It's not a compact, it's not a contract. And people are stunned. And this is a sort of more modern, more, you know, it's not a stuffy old, it's not the Wall Street Journal saying this is how you have to behave if you want to be an old person or mature. This is simply the risk that comes with being in a society where there are all kinds of media. And if you say something, it's going to be overheard. Right. And if it's overheard by the media, a lot of people are going to overhear it.
Yeah, we have, as individuals, we have a lot of power these days to communicate our ideas and thoughts as widely as possible. But unfortunately, with great power, and the power to communicate here, with great power comes great responsibility. Responsibility for others and the impact of your thoughts and ideas. And frankly, the impact of your thoughts and ideas and communications on yourself. And often folks don't think about that.
Yeah, something else too. I think in general, let me see if I can characterize it this way. Too many people that we talk to generally are of the mindset that there are all kind of media out there and we can exploit them to some degree. We can use them to our advantage. We can build our career with them. We can become somewhat of a public figure and in that way enhance our career, put a little steroids in our career path. In other words, let's start with, again, value. we recommend a different approach, which is start with risk. And that's why, in terms of this cast, we're starting talking about the press. It's old media. And yet, if you start with the idea that there is risk and that your first responsibility is to mitigate risk by understanding the rules of the various media, and believe me, some of the new media use old media rules. If you start by understanding the risk and build a set of behaviors for working with the press that are built on risk, then when you try to get value out of it, you won't make mistakes and have things blow up in your face the way so many people do. And unfortunately, I hate to say this, but young people more than more experienced people. So if you're under the age of 30 and you're wondering, you know, is this a fuddy-duddy cast? It's not. This is how to start your relationships with the media. And maybe if you have a blog, then you're way ahead of us. But we would recommend that you understand the risk first, mitigate that risk, develop strong behaviors around this stuff, and then learn at certain opportunities when to create value out of your relationship with the press and new media.
Good. Okay. So, I mean, given all this risk, isn't it safe to assume that if you're part of a large company, that your company probably has rules around all this?
You think? Yeah. And look, if you're at a large organization, just because you don't know what the rules are doesn't mean there aren't rules, right? And this is one of those things. Again, it's like management. It's a much smaller problem than management, but nobody's teaching it. There are rules, but you know that nobody's teaching it. Everybody just assumes you'll get it. And they assume that you won't make a big enough mistake that you'll get us and you in a lot of trouble.
I think part of that, though, is it's companies, frankly, haven't quite figured it out yet, or certainly haven't implemented the changes required, because it used to be that opportunities for speaking to the press were much more tightly controlled and manageable. And today, with this proliferation of different media right. channels, the opportunity for interaction with quote-unquote the press are greatly enhanced, and companies haven't quite figured out how to, I don't say rein that in, but communicate their policies such that they don't get themselves into hot water.
Yeah, and I think what's happened is the companies have done a poor job of communicating it, and no sense in ignoring that. And what's happening is the education of professionals, of the workforce, is happening through dramatic events. People are getting fired for saying or doing stupid things in what amounts to public, because it's being picked up by old or new media. And so rather than there being a coherent training effort, there are examples. And anytime training is done by examples, you want something different, right? We don't want examples of, you know, don't do that. Look at what happened to him. We want to have a coherent policy and a coherent way of addressing this stuff. But I think you're totally right. And look, they've been burned too many times, companies have, to not have healthy respect for the press and other media. And at the same time, we've all read about companies using new media or trying to use new media for their own advantage. And that's great. And it proves that they're thinking about the value. And therefore, surely, right, they've thought about the risk. But look, the way most large firms deal with the risk is to limit it, as you say, through policies, through training. But unfortunately, very few firms of any size actually follow through on the training. And that means the word doesn't get out that we have rules about who can talk to the media, and if you do what you're supposed to say, and if you do how you're supposed to say it.
Even small firms probably have policies. They're just not stated explicitly, and they're probably in the minds of the founder somewhere. But if you ask him or her, they probably have a policy.
Yeah, and the policy is if you say something that causes, you know, this is crazy. If you say something that puts us at risk, I'm going to fire you, right? As with so many other nonlinear aspects of smaller firms, the owner or CEO or president knows what she wants, can't cover everything with everybody, hopes her people know what she means, and realizes that the heart of the small firm policy is basically, if you get caught talking to the press and you say something that hurts my firm, I'm probably going to fire you, because you may well ruin everything I've put my entire life into for the past 5, 10, 15, 20 years. And you know, perhaps that sounds terrible, but I can say from experience, perhaps you'd understand if it were your company.
Yeah. Let's say you don't know what the policy is, and we can't cover every possible combination and permutation of policies out there. So for our listeners, if you don't know what the policy, do you have a guess as like what the number one policy might be?
The number one policy is don't do it. Or if, in fact, they allow some people to talk to media, they require training. That's the primary rule. It's frankly usually written down, but it's rarely communicated, and the training is usually reserved for executives. But basically, it says you shouldn't talk to the press unless you've been specifically trained to do so by the firm or as part of a clearly communicated strategy coordinated with HR or sales or corporate communications or even an external consulting or media or training firm. And so this is what the outgrowth of that is. If you haven't been told you can talk to the media, and to be safe, folks, that means media of any type. I know it probably seems cool to get quoted in a blog, but to be safe, any type of media. And if you're just about at any firm we know of, large or small, if you haven't been told you can talk to the media, then you are likely to be violation in either one of or both of the rules regarding not being able to do so without training. If you talk to the media and you don't know what the rules are, you're probably in violation of one of the rules. And I know there are places that people that say, oh, big companies, they've got all these rules. Well, as we just said, small companies have the rule too. Maybe at a big company, you won't get fired, although it will hurt your career. At a small company, you could very easily get fired. Look, let me just go a step further here for a little more background. This is not a question of trust at all. It is a question. It is a function of the realities of organizational media and modern life. When we as professionals, particularly managers, speak to the media, and we are speaking at least in part based on our role within the firm, we are perceived to be speaking for the firm whether we are or are not. We don't get to speak for ourselves. The fact that we know we are not speaking for the firm, we know it. The fact that we know it is irrelevant. Communication is what the listener does, and that's not even the medium, right? The listener is not the medium. It's not the media. It's the medium's consumers, all right? We are completely insulated from our listener when we talk to the media, to the press. We're completely insulated from that consumer. And so therefore, in hindsight, we can't complain that we were not speaking for the firm. Because they thought the medium, not the medium, but the consumer of the media, right? The reader of the paper, the reader of the blog, the watcher of the video, the homemade video on YouTube or whatever, they thought we were when they heard us speaking and the person said, hey, you're with XYZ Corporation. And if they think we were, anything we say reflects and redounds back to our employer.
Yeah, but that's not fair.
Yeah. Yeah, that, you know what? I think we should change this to fair tools.
Fair tools.
Not career tools, but fair tools, because right. Because careers are supposed to be fair, right? I mean, yeah. Isn't it funny, though? I mean, people, you say that because we've heard that before, right? I mean, that's the response we get when we're talking to professionals who have gotten themselves in a scrape about a media interaction that went awry. They say, well, God, that's not fair, Mark. I mean, I can't believe that.
Well, often, well, we're gonna talk more about why this might be true.
Yeah.
It is true. Which is, given what the press, and I say that in a very broad sense, what they do with our comments is so unpredictable sometimes that often when asked a question, the most appropriate comment is simply no comment.
Yeah, it's frustrating for people though, right? I mean, people want to be, right? But yeah, the answer, our guidance is simply say no comment. It's the ultimate simple solution. Now look, we're not stupid, okay? We know how tempting it is to be quoted. 90% of the time, what we're being asked is so benign, surely no one could figure out a way to make us look bad by saying something bland or simply plain old positive and supportive. So it's natural for many of us, virtually all of us, to say, this is small, this is easy, this isn't covered by the rules, right? And the answer, of course, is wrong. Before you comment, I have alluded to this before in the forums. Kipling's poem, If, has a couplet in it which says, if you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken, twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools. You may think the media are knave-like, and you may feel that the people who read your comments out of context, because of course the press is not required to accurately reproduce the context in which you were speaking for their readers and listeners, if you think that that person is going to end up being a fool, it's far better to say no comment. And look, Wendy, our our Career Tools associate, she says, look, this is great. We were talking about this, Cass, and she says, the press isn't contacting you because you're important. They're contacting you because you're stupid. What she means, and she's totally, I think, channeling me just for effect, is that in many cases, the people they really want a comment from, that the media really wants a comment from, are either trained and knowledgeable enough on the topic so as to diffuse any potential media drama, or they're smart enough to say no comment. And so the media don't ask them. They don't. I mean, how many times have you seen a comment in the paper or on the press or the media where someone was, you know, an official spokesperson for the company was quoted as saying, we have no comment, or we stand by our prosecution, or we stand by our products in the marketplace and believe they're right. They're simply bland statements. They're almost blandishments, right? So the media doesn't ask those people. They ask other people like us. And we say totally silly things, utterly unaware of how twisted they become and how knave-like the interlocutor can be and how foolish we're going to appear to a listener who, again, doesn't understand the context. And look, there's another important point we need to make. In the modern media world, we can never know to whom we're speaking and whether they may choose to see our comments as blogworthy. And this could just be the guy or gal standing next to you who doesn't identify themselves in the press and being in the press anyway. People choose to see our comments as blogworthy. They're blogworthy, Twitter worthy, or social media worthy in some way. Every conversation that we have that draws on our professional role in some way is a reason to pause and consider to whom we are speaking and what the nature of our relationship is, as well as the potential risks of our comments becoming viral or even simply known more widely than we might like. Our recommendations here do not apply only to formal interviews with the press, but also in general to the life of a professional in the modern media world. And that may sound old, it may sound not as much fun, but it eliminates risk enormously. And if you do this for a while and learn the way to live this way professionally, it's much easier to take advantage of the value. So just say no comment. It may not be as much fun, but it's professional. And the fun that many people seek in having a relationship with the media is fraught with risks that nobody's telling us about. But we read about in the paper every once in a while and we say that won't happen to me.
Right. Well, we're asking people to do the same thing here that they do in their investments, which is you never assess value without risk, if you want a good return, that is.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Right. There's no free lunch, right? Yeah, exactly.
Good. Okay. So let's say you, I don't know, just say you ignore everything we said here about no comment.
Right.
It's really hard here because now we're going to talk about if you're the person who ignores our first advice and decide that you're going to talk to the media anyways. What should you say? What should you do?
What is that? A closed mouth gathers no foot. If for some reason you are in a situation where you do decide to speak to the media, please don't tell them we told you to. And whether that media is old or new, in some way, figure out how to stay positive despite the many opportunities you're going to be given to, shall we say, not be positive. It is so easy, and we'll give you an example in a moment, to feel yourself be perceived as smarter, more wise, more knowledgeable by saying negative things, by essentially endorsing the imposing point of view, because you're not saying that you believe in A because you know nothing about B. It makes you appear smarter to say you're in favor of A if you also show that you know a lot about B, which is really, really dumb in the media. Look, media members are expert at pitting our own desires against one another. Yeah, of course we want to stay positive, right? Sure, yeah, that's a desire. Why wouldn't I be? Because you have a competing desire to appear knowledgeable. You got to understand the other side of the story. Look, the protesters against our company have a point of view, and no manager worth his salt would suggest he doesn't understand their point even while disagreeing with those same protesters. But when we start stating the other side's point of view out of a desire to appear knowledgeable, we are in total danger of being misquoted or misunderstood both of which are dangerous in public. Because remember, we're going to be misunderstood by the media, and then they're going to make it even more misunderstood when they put it out in front of their listeners. Because again, everything we say to the media is being said widely to the public. Now, I have some examples from my professional career, but there are thousands more. Suppose we have a new product launch, right? Nothing unpositive about that. Suppose, look, let's be steroidal about it and say it's a portable product that has some buzz, that it's the latest iPod-like thing, right? That's a good thing. Nobody's going to complain about that. Everything's fine until the environmental protesters complain about the dangers of nickel-cadmium batteries, right? NiCad batteries. That they're not being recycled, and that they're like the ones that your firm is using because they're the industry standard, right? And you have to use industry standard because otherwise your product would be too expensive. And the reason they're the industry standard is because lots of people use them already, and so surely it's okay for us to use them. Now, okay, they're industry standard, but here the protesters are complaining. How are we supposed to know in our firm that there's a battery firm in China that's developed a battery fluid? It's not acid anymore. It's just called battery fluid that you can actually drink, right? You couldn't do that with battery acid before. And imagine them saying that to the press, or that firm, the one that's coming up with this battery fluid that we can drink, is the one that supplies batteries for the iPod. And in other words, this is one of the leading battery firms in the world. They're not, you know, this is not some wacky startup that nobody's ever heard of that the environmentalists are touting, right? And look, there's nothing wrong with what the environmentalists are doing. They're trying to take care of our heritage, our resources, right? But the environmentalists or the press are not going to tell us that neither Apple nor anyone else is using that technology yet. It's not proven. It's horribly expensive and so on, because they won't have to, because we're too busy backpedaling and stammering when we're asked, why aren't you using this stuff that won't pollute? And thus enters the problem, because ultimately staying positive almost inevitably, frankly, ends up back at no comment. You don't want to say no comment at that point unless you're trained on how to do it. Of course, we have another suggestion coming up in a second about repeating your point. But if you don't know how to get out of a situation like this, then you better start with no comment. And why does the press do this? Why does media do this? Because drama is almost inevitably conflict. There's drama in a birthday party, but there's a lot more drama in things that have conflict associated with them. Just sample 100 YouTube videos to see that the funny videos or the interesting videos are the ones where bad things happen or funny things happen that are perhaps not bad, but are not perceived as funny at the time by the person who's in the video. So if you're going to stay positive and you're not trained on how to get out of challenges, you almost always have to go back to, no comment.
Oh, then you've lost the battle.
Yeah. The only way you don't lose that battle is say no comment at the beginning, right? So you're not interesting to the media, and they'll go talk to one of the spokespersons who's trained on how to do it. But if you get into it and then you have to say no comment, oof. Yeah, the company had no comment to blah, 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 blah. Yeah. In fact, you'll probably be discredited by the media person. Well, maybe a good thing. Maybe they won't talk to us anymore.
Maybe. All right, folks, that's it for this week. We'll finish it up again next week. In the meantime, have a great week. So long.